Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Celebrating 6 years is radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of two books, and all-around nice guy.
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Yeah, we're back. It's 34 After. Thanks for hanging around with me today. Already having a great time. I love talking about branding. Those ladies who are just on Gene and Jane, anytime I get a chance to talk to small business owners about branding, I get excited about that because it's really important stuff to talk about, like the topic we're going to talk about today, which is technology. And we're going to do that with our good friend Steve Del Bianco, the Vice President of the Association for Competitive Technology. And Steve is our good friend. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Jim. Great to be here.
It's good to have you back. And it just, you know, Steve, it seems like you were just here.
Oh, gosh, Jim. It was only yesterday you and I were just talking about the MyDoom virus. And,
well, it was actually Friday, I guess it was. Yeah, Friday, or right. Was it Thursday? I forgot. Anyway, but, yeah, I had you on the show on Friday, actually, and I asked you to join us quickly, and you agreed to sit in for a few minutes and tell us about the MyDoom virus. We've got a lot more to talk about today, but I want you to give us an update. You told us on Friday that the MyDoom virus was going to really sort of work its evil on Super Bowl Sunday. Now, tell us what happened.
That's right, and somewhere between 500,000 and 1,000,000 computers worldwide were presumed to be infected with the MyDoom virus, which meant that on February 1st, they were supposed to start attacking the SCO website. SCO is a software company that is suing certain folks in the open source community, and that seems to be what aroused their ire. Well, I guess a lot of those folks had their computers off on Sunday. Maybe they were watching the Super Bowl, Jim, and got caught up in that halftime show and never turned their machines on. Because the attacks that came onto SCO were less than a tenth of what was expected.
Yeah.
But let's not get complacent about it, because even that number of attacks on their website was enough to bring it down.
Really?
Two days in a row, Sunday and Monday, their website was shut down by the quantity of hits on the website, so they had to set up another alternative website in order to let customers still get there.
Mm-hmm.
So that attack is supposed to continue for another 10 days, and today we're supposed to see an additional attack on Microsoft's website. And both Microsoft and SCO have offered bounty payments of $250,000 for information leading to the conviction of the folks that wrote the virus.
Right.
And
now,
I think that one thing to think about, too, is in the days ahead, those of us who perhaps acquired the virus, right, by, I guess, inadvertently opening an email from somebody we thought we knew. It's not only the attacks that are sent on Microsoft and SCO, but this virus opens a little back door on your computer so that the folks that wrote the virus can use your computer as sort of a bouncer or a relay for sending spam.
Like a zombie kind of thing.
Exactly, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So be aware of that and make sure that everyone should run their virus checker, you know, once a day, if not once a week, and update your virus checker with the updates that the vendor provides so that it'll catch this virus, the MyDoom A, MyDoom B, and strip it off your computer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, folks, and be sure to do that. You know, Steve, let's talk for just a minute about the open source versus proprietary software. Won't you give us I don't know of anybody who could do that in a couple of minutes better than you could. Tell us the difference between, well, you know, with no politics, and we can talk about politics in a minute, but strictly from a nomenclature standpoint, what's the difference between proprietary software and open source software?
Jim, commercial software or proprietary software is a more traditional way of developing code. Companies would invest money hiring programmers. They would design a product, release it, and sell it. There'd be restrictions on the people they'd sell it to. They couldn't make copies and give it away. They couldn't modify the code.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the open source is a different model. It's been around for a while, but it's really come into prominence in the last 2 years with products like Linux and Apache.
Mm-hmm.
It has two differences. The first is that it relies a lot on people working on their own time and donating their own effort to help make the software complete. And number two, it's given to folks under a license, a very restrictive license called the GPL, and general public license. And it's restrictive in the sense that that you, anything you do to the code, you can't sell or make money on. You need to release it back into the public domain. Mm-hmm. So from the standpoint of us customers and systems integrators and consultants in the industry, this is a great thing because it's competition between the open source and the proprietary or commercial software model.
Right, right.
So it's good for the industry to see these two compete. They're slightly different in the way the code is constructed, but they're very different in the way the code is licensed.
And the business models are really, really quite different, aren't they?
Well, you know, at first they might seem different, but they're really not. I mean, IBM does commercials all through the Super Bowl on their open source.
They made a decision to go with open source direction.
But they really didn't. Mm-hmm. They really didn't. I can explain that after the break.
Right after these messages, 22. We'll be right back with our good friend Steve DelBianco. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what's the environment looking like out there, the regulatory environment for the technology industry. Don't forget, not only for the producers, but also consumers like you and me. We have something at stake here, too. 22. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Steve DelBianco. He's the vice president of Association for Competitive Technologies. I've said it so many times, folks, I trip myself up. Association for Competitive Technologies. And by the way, folks, my website is www.jbsba.com. If you have a question for me or for any one of our guests, that email address to send your question is askjim@jbsba.com. Steve, we were talking about the differences between open source and proprietary software, or as you also call it, commercial software, and there is a certain little bit of a battle line drawn, isn't there, between these two philosophies?
And you know, battle lines like that are probably really good for the industry mm-hmm. and consumers, mm-hmm. provided that the two of them have an environment where they can battle it out based on the features, benefits, costs, and the value that they deliver to consumers.
Right.
And you mentioned just before the break what some companies have embraced it, and it's true. Hewlett-Packard, Sun, IBM, some large hardware companies offer their hardware that runs on open-source software like Linux, but they continue to sell their commercial products that run on top of that, and they continue to sell lots of services to go with the hardware.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think it works pretty well. Mm-hmm. The area where that starts to get to be a concern to us is if state governments, or even national governments, start to legislate preferences for certain type of licensing. For instance, the state of Massachusetts has just issued a statement where they would prefer that state government agencies, when looking at software, evaluate the open source versus commercial software. And some would call that a preference in the way the language is written. Mm-hmm. Preferences aren't necessary because I think the marketplace can sort out what it thinks the best
Absolutely.
Software is for the money.
So Microsoft is Massachusetts is their actions, by the way, that you just mentioned is one of the negatives that you saw in your techie report this quarter, isn't it?
Right, and I don't want to bring things down too much. It was a good quarter. Hey,
yeah.
The fourth quarter of 2003 was a good quarter for the tech environment, or as you and I say, the techie, the Tech Environmental Quality Index, TEQI, and in this town of Washington, you've got to have an acronym for everything.
Yeah.
So we call it techie. And the techie was up two points in the fourth quarter of 2003, largely due to some good news that countered a little bit of bad news on the state versus federal regulation of interstate commerce and e-commerce.
Mm-hmm. One thing I want, before we go any further, folks, I don't want to blow by this techie thing. Folks, this is a very sophisticated model that Steve and his folks have created to really evaluate the environment for technology, consumers, and producers, the regulatory environment, the statutory environment for all of us, those of us who create and consume. And I'm on both sides of this issue. We create software technology, and we also consume it very much. And so you guys, Steve, I want to make sure that we let people know that you know this techie didn't just come out of the, you know, fall out of the sky. You guys worked hard to create this ability to measure the technology environment.
Well, thanks, Jim. We do work really hard every quarter, updating it for all of the bills that are introduced in Congress, state legislatures, as well as watching what's going on in the courts and with the administration here in D.C. Today we have almost 70 bills ranked in the techie. It's over 20 pages long, but I want to spare any of your listeners the trouble of going through all that. We condense it to just a couple of pages every quarter and do a release. And then we take it to Capitol Hill, visit with lawmakers to make sure they know they're not doing more damage to the tech environment with bills that they had well intentions for.
Well, and you guys do a good job of educating them, too. Consequently, in the last year, the tech environment has actually been improving. As you say, the last quarter, fourth quarter 2003, was actually the techie was up a couple of points.
Right.
Yep, I can give you some highlights. There were
Please
three bills
do.
In particular.
Go ahead.
That picked it up. The first was the passage of what's called the CAN-SPAM Act. And believe it or not, that's an acronym, right?
Yeah.
Yet another clever congressional acronym. It stands for Controlling the Assault of Non-Solicited Pornography and Marketing. So they call it the CAN-SPAM Act. It actually it has a whole slew of measures designed to reduce the amount of spam that we get in our email boxes. But one of its primary benefits is it preempts or replaces independent state laws that have been coming out against spam, all of which had good intentions as well. But you can't let the states come up with a patchwork of regulation on something like email that crosses state lines in a nanosecond.
Which is exactly what had happened, especially the California law, which was ridiculous.
It truly was. So I believe that companies that sent emails, some of which trickled into California, could find themselves, you know, violating California laws and being sued for it, when in fact they were complying with the laws of the other states that they send to.
So
we're happy about that. It took effect January 1st of 2004, and probably none of us have noticed a difference yet.
Yeah. When is my spam going to be canned, Steve?
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that compliance is everything. When you think about it, the bad guys, the bad actors who send the spam without revealing who they are, without giving us an unsubscribe option, the bad actors who steal email addresses by scraping them off of websites,
yeah,
and reselling them, those guys spend their days avoiding the law, not complying with the law.
So they laughed at this law, didn't they?
They truly do. And all that's going to really matter is enforcement. And the good news is this bill does give the FTC more enforcement authority. But until and unless the Federal Trade Commission works harder at that and enlists the help of the states to go after bad guys, we won't see much progress.
Absolutely. Well, I'm hoping to start seeing some arrests being made somewhere with these spammers, because we've got to figure out how to. I mean, they're actually much more dangerous, in my opinion, much more debilitating and more terroristic to us than the virus folks have been. Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back with our good friend Steve Del Bianco. We're going to talk some more about the techie. There is more good news to come. We're back at 7-till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, having more fun than the law allows, with our good friend Steve Del Bianco, the vice president with the Association for Competitive Technologies. Steve, give us your website, please.
Sure, Jim. It's www.actonline.org.
And they can find the techie there, can't they? The three-page
right.
summary right there.
And we're posting the Q4 of 03. We'll post it on Monday.
Okay, sounds good. And now, also, NetChoice. Talk to us for a second about NetChoice.
ACT, the group I'm with, joined several other trade associations and big companies like eBay and Orbitz to found a coalition called NetChoice, which promotes choice, convenience, and commerce on the Internet. And that's open to free membership for anyone who likes to do buying and selling over the web or over catalogs. And that's at www.netchoice.org.
Is netprivacypower.org still around?
It is, Jim, but I think that the message and the advertising that it did has been overtaken by many other folks, like
right.
GetNetWise, the Internet
right.
Education Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I really think American consumers get it about privacy, that they need to be responsible for who they share their information with.
Right.
So I think that's really worked pretty well.
Good, and you guys are one of the pioneers in launching that, and I take my hat off to you for that. Steve, let's talk some more about, we got more good news, actually, isn't there? More good news with regard to the technology environment.
I wanted to give you two highlights, Jim. One was another bill that passed at the end of 2003, and the president signed into law. It's called the Fairness to Contact Lens Consumers Act. And this fits right with the NetChoice messaging I just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
What this bill does is makes it so that all of us who want to buy our contact lenses over catalog or Internet can do so without having to be forced into a situation of buying the lenses from our own optometrist. It requires that anybody with a prescription be given for free a copy of their prescription, mm-hmm. and that the prescriptions from your optometrist last at least a year. And what this allows us to do is to buy the lenses from the lowest cost provider and still protect us from folks who might give lenses without a prescription. We think that's a big benefit for e-commerce and interstate catalog sales.
Could this be the first chink in the armor of a lot of other industries that are actually there's where the states are actually preventing the sale of their products online?
That's exactly what we hope, Jim, that it's a trend that will continue in other commodities where folks are facing regulation and industry practices that make it tough for companies to compete across state lines.
What do we say to those companies that are domiciled in these states, they're planted in the ground, they're offering good services, and you know, of course, you know what a free trader I am, Steve, but what do we say to those people when we tell them that, you know, that we're working hard to, you know, we're out there promoting you or whoever is out there promoting the ability to basically, you know, offer what they might consider to be unfair competition. I don't think it's unfair, but it certainly is a new competition. What do we say?
It surely is. And those Main Street retailers, I guess the minority of Main Street retailers who don't have catalogs or websites, have been under assault for years. The shopping mm-hmm. malls at first, and Walmart and the big box stores today. I guess catalogs have been around for 40 years. And the Internet's just the latest incarnation that if people want choice and convenience, they'll seek it out. I think it's up to businesses to learn how to offer choice and convenience, but still emphasize what they do best.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's the thing that small business owners have got to understand is that whether it's Walmart, whether it's catalog, whether it's an Internet, retailer of whatever kind of products, you know, those are all people who enter the marketplace legally, and whether we like it or not, you know, our best defense against something like that is just to make sure that we do an excellent job, not to resort to you know, some kind of a statute that prevents them from entering the marketplace legally as we have.
Agreed. Hey, there were one or two other highlights.
Okay, go ahead.
The president's budget included the 21st Century Nanotechnology Research and Development Act.
Those nanites.
So, can you believe that? And it's the technology that should enable us to move ahead, to leapfrog a lot of the semiconductor technology that we use today. And the government in the new budget is about $1 billion on R&D and nanotechnology.
That's good.
Kind of basic R&D will keep us at the leading edge of technology.
When will we start seeing nanites in regular life?
Just the very second that they can make the technology that satisfies and solves some killer application for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll see it on the shelves in an instant.
What if one of those nanites gets loose?
It makes its way into your computer.
Yeah, what if we get nanites coming around? They take over the world. We got to watch out for those nanites, Steve. Hey, Steve, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thanks, Jim, and look forward to being back on the show. Thanks for what you do.
We'll get you back on real soon, and thanks for the good news on the techie, the technology environment. That's good news for all of us. Thanks, Steve. Thank you for helping to take care of us up there in Washington, D.C., which he and his organization, Act Online, Association for Competitive Technology, does at actonline.org. Got to go for just this hour, though. I'll be right back. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.